I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Now we are going to step into the beauty shop. That's where we get a woman's perspective on the things happening in the news. Early in the program, we brought up an issue that is very important to many women, the whole hair thing. The U.S. Surgeon General, Dr. Regina Benjamin, appeared at one of the largest hair shows in the country. Really, it's a convention for people who work in hair care, and talked about the need for heart-healthy hairstyles, which is to say to get people to think about removing the impediments to getting more exercise if it's their hair. We want to talk more about that in a moment. We also want to talk about New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg's not-so-great Spanish skills and former Vice President Dick Cheney's not-so-flattering depiction of former colleagues, including Condoleezza Rice, who was first National Security Advisor and then Secretary of State in the administration they both served, the George W. Bush administration. Cheney wrote about Rice and others in his new memoir, In My Time. Also, there's the news that Jay-Z and Beyonce are expecting their first baby. Both of them are superstars, but we thought we'd like to talk about whose career is actually likely to be affected by this. So joining us to talk about these stories is our panel of experts. Viviana Hurtado is the blogger-in-chief at the website The Wise Latina Club. Danielle Belton is behind the pop culture and politics blog, The Black Snob. Michelle Bernard is the CEO and president of the Bernard Center for Women, Politics, and Public Policy. That's an independent right-of-center think tank. And Mitzi Miller is the editor-in-chief of Jet Magazine. Welcome, ladies. Thank you all so much for joining us.
Thank you. Oh,
thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
And congratulations, Mitzi, to you. We haven't talked to you since the big promotion. That's quite a promotion.
Yes, it's a huge leap. Thank you so much. I'm excited. This is a wonderful opportunity. I'm really, really excited to be here.
Well, let's do hair, because okay. We're in the beauty shop. As we talked about earlier in the program, the Surgeon General of the United States, Regina Benjamin, recently spoke at the Bronner Brothers Hair Show in Atlanta. That is a huge affair, made even more famous than it is, you know, in the industry, made famous outside the industry by Chris Rock's documentary, Good Hair. And she wanted to talk about the fact that some women, particularly black women, seem to be avoiding exercising because they want to preserve their hair. And I wanted to just ask each of you if, well, Scout's honor, have you ever done that? Viviana, have you ever done that? Avoided exercising because you wanted to keep your hair cute?
Absolutely. I have kinky hair. I have a relaxer. And on the most expressive days, and that's going really fast, it takes me 45 minutes to deep condition and to blow it out and to set it. That said, I think it's important to just be careful not to overgeneralize and say something along, you know, it would be the equivalent of saying some of my Anglo-American friends won't exercise because they're outdoors because they're afraid that they might get sunburned. That said, women, particularly women of color, I know I've spent a small fortune on my hair care, on relaxers, on conditioners, on blow dryers. And I think it's important that the hairdressers are a really important source of information for women, where you can really get a conversation started about health issues. And this is the way it seems that this discussion's going.
Well, you've left ahead to where I was going to go next, which is, do you think this isn't, in fact, an important use of the Surgeon General's time? There was some difference of opinion about that. We had a conservative analyst on earlier in the program. He said he thought this was not a good use of her time to make this a priority. So you were a leaping head. Michelle, what about you? Have you ever done that? You look fabulous, by the way. I love you, too. I just want to mention it.
Thank you. I will tell you, I exercise, and I am someone who always thinks, good gracious, I'm going to have to do my hair afterwards. And I admit, like, if I've got a big dinner to go to on a certain night, I'm not going to exercise unless I know I can go to the hairdresser that same day. But that being said, I want to live long. I want to be healthy. I've got two young kids. I want to be here for them. I believe in exercise. I particularly believe in the importance of exercise in our community, which means you figure out.
You're African American. For those who haven't seen you on your millions of appearances on the networks and on the cable talk shows.
Thank you. Yes, I am. I am African American, and it's so important in communities of color that you really have to just get over it. I have lots of friends who will tell you they don't exercise because of the whole hair issue, and I figure, you know what? You put it up, you get a sweatband, and you do the best you can.
So, do you think she was right? She is right to focus on.
I think this is an absolute priority. I am so glad that this is something that she's focusing on. It's one of those little things. I don't want to overgeneralize, but it's a little sort of like a small or maybe medium or large dirty secret in the African American community in particular, where we have a problem with weight, we have a problem with diabetes, we have a problem with hypertension. A lot of those things can be dealt with through proper nutrition and through exercise, and it's something that we have to talk about.
Danielle?
I completely agree that it's a pertinent issue. Just in my own case, I have super, super, super thick hair. I mean, my beautician usually jokes that I have like four people's hair in my head.
You or 10, I would say.
And I can still remember as a little girl, my mother finally said I was old enough to get my first perm and being so excited because that meant I could play and not worry about sweating my hair back. And my mother being upset with me that I'd ruined her, you know, the 4 hours of work she would put into it every 2 weeks to wash and straighten my hair and hope that it would last 2 weeks of me being a little rambunctious kid. And so I know that in the past for me, because my hair is so much work, no matter what I decide to do with it, just wearing it natural like this today, you know, I spent an hour braiding it up last night. Yeah. So it is an investment if you want to look nice and... It's a reality that you...
What do you make of the analyst earlier? And again, as a matter of courtesy, we wanted to discuss somebody who was just on the program, but he did make these comments in the New York Times saying that he thought that this was not, you know, an appropriate use of her time because this is a small issue. And I want to ask you, you know, what about that, Danielle? Why would you... And I found it interesting, given that, as we said, Dr. Benjamin is focusing on personal responsibility. And secondly, just giving you some numbers. According to, you know, government figures, 33% of white women over the age of 20 are overweight or obese. 43% of Hispanic women over the age of 20 are overweight or obese. And 50% of black women are over the age of 20 are overweight or obese. So just at minimum, somewhere between 33% and 50% of most of the population of women. And I'm always puzzled by this question of how half the population can be a special interest group.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
Mitzi wants to get in here. Mitzi, what do you think?
Well, I have to agree with all the ladies. I think that it's extremely pertinent. I think it's an important issue, and I don't think that we're a specialty issue. I think anytime we hit over 50-something percent, you need to realize that this is a majority. We need to pay attention. And as a woman that wears a natural, there are days that I don't want my natural frizz because, you, like Danielle said, you still have to style your hair when it's natural. So I enjoy exercising, but I'm not fanatical. And there's definitely times that I've been like, I have somewhere to go. I can't do it. Time, money, all of that is put into our hair. Appearance isn't everything, but it's definitely in our society important, and women really bear the brunt of that.
Danielle, one of the things I was curious in talking to you about is that, do you think that this is one of those issues where, you know, John McWhorter, the linguist and author and commentator, wrote a piece for TheRoot.com earlier this week, said that maybe there's just a sort of a floor of getting it. You know, maybe there's a certain point at which other people just aren't going to get your life, and you should just stop trying to... persuade them to get your life. And I'm wondering whether you think that this is
well,
that
some of it is that to a certain extent. I can see why a certain man would have that response where this is a non-issue. Because for a man, it is. A man can just wear his hair short. He can wear different varieties of the same clothes every day to work because he has a suit and people will not judge him. As a woman, your appearance, because our society is not fair, you're going to be judged by how you look. If you don't look nice today, if your clothes aren't in style, if your hair isn't in style, if your hair isn't neat and professional looking, you will be judged for it.
But the question I think I have here is, is this a situation where somebody, because Dr. Benjamin is also a woman of color who has this personal experience, that experience as well as the data is negated? About the fact is there is a body of research now that talks about the fact where women have disclosed that they are making these decisions. They are saying, I'm spending this amount of money on my hair, so I'm not going to exercise. And other people might think that's crazy, but that's the calculation they're making to just say, well, that's not important. And so the question I have, you know, here is this a question of sort of culturally people not getting it, or is it a question of that people just negate issues of particular interest to particular people?
I would say, frankly, that it is probably just a little bit of both. I think until we get to a point in time where people actually realize that this is an issue of public health and preventive medicine for anyone who believes in self-reliance and personal responsibility, people can't do that unless they actually have the information before them. Black women are less likely than white women to get breast cancer, but are more likely than white women to die of breast cancer. So, and diet has a lot to do with that, and as well as, you know...
There might be genetic. There might be some genetic
There's some genetic component to it, but there's also just, you know, going to the doctor, what you eat, how often you get a mammogram, how early you get a mammogram. It's no different, for example, than letting the public know that it's important to exercise.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. We're having a visit to the beauty shop. We're getting women's perspective on news of the day. Joining us, Michelle Bernard, that's who was speaking just now. She's head of the Bernard Center for Women, Politics, and Public Policy. That's an independent right-of-center think tank. Also with us, Viviana Hurtado, the blogger-in-chief at the website The Wise Latina Club. Danielle Belton runs the blog The Black Snob. And Mitzi Miller is editor-in-chief of the venerable Jet magazine. We wanted to talk about, switch gears and talk about Vice President Dick Cheney, former Vice President Dick Cheney, who just released his memoir where he talks about the Bush administration. I'm still reading it. I think many of us are still reading it, but many people will have seen his interviews with the Today Show where he makes some really pointed remarks about some of his former colleagues. And the one that's caught a lot of people's attention where he talks about former Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice in tears or tearfully saying she was wrong to urge former President Bush to apologize for mistakes in his case and for making in his case to go to war with Iraq. So Colin Powell has weighed in, former Secretary of State, Rice's predecessor, saying that these are cheap shots and condescending and so forth. And I'm interested in what you all think. And Mitzi, I'll start with you.
I wish I could say that we were all surprised, but I don't think anyone is surprised by Dick Cheney's ritual. It's just disheartening. Disheartening. I feel like it's disheartening that after the fact you're still going after people, and especially a woman. You know, it had to be challenging to be Condoleezza in that administration. So, and to pull out a weak moment and put it on display for the nation and repeat it in your interviews, I thought that was extremely low, and it was just really disheartening. And, I think during the time of the administration, I didn't generally empathize with her all the time, but in this moment, my heart went out to her. It's hard to be a black woman at the top.
Well, she can take care of herself. She's pretty tough. But Michelle, what about you? What do you think? Is this inappropriate score settling? You think he's just being mean, or you think he's just telling it the way he sees it?
I watched some of the interviews he's done, both on Morning Joe and on the Today Show, and I don't know how to describe what I feel about it. I feel very torn. If we were sitting in a court of law and sort of just watching him from the perspective of a juror, he appears to really feel that he's just giving the facts as he sees them and how he feels that he lived them. And it's hard to tell if he actually feels like he's going after people or if he's trying to get back at someone. That being said, I'm a big supporter. I really am a fan of Colin Powell and of Condi Rice, and I know that they were in very, very difficult positions for a lot of reasons, and there's always something that
strikes.
Why
should he sympathize with how hard it was to be them? I mean, is that his job?
It's not his job, and I'm not saying he should sympathize with it. I think a lot of the American public, particularly the African-American community, sympathizes with them because whether you agreed with their politics or not, there's this moment of pride when they get the jobs that they had, when they held themselves the way that they did, particularly for Colin Powell, who really took it on the chin for the Bush administration by going out and giving this commentary about weapons of mass destruction. But frankly, when you talk about a woman and you say that she tearfully told you something, it always just strikes you as inappropriate. Yeah. The girl cries and the guys shoot.
Oh, well, okay. Well, there you go. I'm skipping past a little bit here because I wanted to get to something that, Viviana, I know you wanted to talk about, which is that as Hurricane Irene bore down on New York last weekend, the mayor of New York, Michael Bloomberg, held several press conferences in English, of course, his native language, and then in Spanish, but his Spanish not so skilled in that. And now people are making fun of him. One New Yorker even created a Twitter feed called El Bloombito to poke fun at his Spanish skills. And I don't know. Don't you give the guy a little credit, or you think if you don't have that swing, if you don't have it, you just keep it to yourself, right?
Es mucho funnio.
Es mucho bueno.
This is the thing. Mayor Bloomberg has been studying Spanish for a really long time. And one of the things that he said way before El Bloombito, way before Hurricane Irene is, gosh, one of these things that I wish that I did better was speak Spanish, because I've been studying it for 7 years and I'm still, and he said, un novato. What's really interesting about this is that Michael Bloomberg just started speaking Spanish. He just got it out there. At one point, he said, no ponga su vida en peligroso, which means do not put your life in dangerous. And the read in the Latino community was a little friendly chuckle, but everybody immediately said, hey, at least he's trying. And what's really important about this is that there's a sizable Latino population in the New York metro area that maybe does not have good English communication skills. And so this was a public service issue, public safety issue. And secondly, this week, the Pew Research Center released a report about Hispanic media. And Hispanic media is outperforming mainstream media in key markets and in other markets hand over fist. Network television, local news, radio, newspapers. And so it's really important to also realize that Michael Bloomberg is worried about public safety, but he's a politician. He's thinking and reaching potential voters.
Muchas gracias.
De nada.
And finally, Danny, I'm sorry, we have to ask you, but you know that we only have a minute for this very important issue, but do you know that the news about Beyonce's pregnancy set a Twitter record?
Oh, you know it
a
did.
Twitter record.
But the question, she does everything big.
She does it all big. The question I have for you is, are her fans still going to dig her now that she's a mommy and she's going to join the mommy club? What do you think?
Oh, they're going to like die. What are we talking about? Like half her fans are moms. Like they are going to just love this. It's like the whole fact that Beyonce's having a baby. What's the baby? It's going to be a boy or a girl? What are they going to name
and
the baby?
And she's going to look fabulous the whole pregnancy.
Exactly. What's she going to wear? What's the baby going to wear? What's the baby's room going
to
look like?
Yeah, but does anybody want to see her doing bootylicious after that?
I mean, Tina Turner is still running
Absolutely.
Around as a grandmother.
So is J-Lo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
True that. True that.
That's
we
true.
We cannot wait to see what her snapback is going to be.
Exactly.
Okay, but you want her to hurry up, give birth. I want the baby to come out singing or rapping. Okay. And I want Beyonce and her new backup, you know, like this is her little backup, mini-me. I want the little baby running on stage with her and the whole nine.
Well, we have at least... What, 6 more months to talk about this,
oh, yes.
Which we will.
Yes.
Mitzi Miller is the editor-in-chief of Jet Magazine. She was with us on the phone from Chicago. Danielle Belton is behind the pop culture and politics blog, The Black Snob. Viviana Hurtado is blogger-in-chief at the Wise Latina Club, the website. Michelle Bernard is the CEO and president of the Bernard Center for Women, Politics, and Public Policy. They were all here with us in Washington, D.C. Ladies, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
And that's our program for today. Tell Me More is produced by Bridget Deshagas, Monica Evstatieva, Eamon Malone, Sanaj Meshkinpour, Emily Oxenschlager, Amitha Parashar, Kathleen Schuster, Amy Ta, Sarah Ventry, Malik Washington, and Saran Yitberek. Our editor is Alicia Montgomery. She had a hand this week from Lori Grant. Our director this week is Arjun Hutchins. Our senior producer is Devar Ardalan. The technical director is Brian Jarbo. He had a hand this week from Sean Phillips. Our theme music was composed by Underdog Entertainment with additional arrangements by Ian Honeyman. The supervising senior editor is Portia Robertson-Migas. The executive producer is Tashima Walker. And to tell us more, go to npr.org and find us under the Programs tab. You can also friend me on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at TellMeMoreNPR. I'm Michelle Martin, and you've been listening to Tell Me More from NPR News and the African American Public Radio Consortium. Let's talk more tomorrow.